Welcome to the Ogletree Deacons Podcast, a quick digest of compelling legal issues and practical insights delivered to you in less than 20 minutes.
Hello, everyone, and thank you for joining us for the Ogletree Deacons Podcast. My name is Karen Tynan, and I'm an attorney here in Sacramento, California. Here with me today is my colleague, Jill Schubert. Our California Leaves podcast touched on pregnancy disability leave, but since it's a very deep topic, we're devoting an entire podcast to California pregnancy disability leave. So, Jill, which employers need to comply with pregnancy disability leave here in California?
So this is one of the most universally applicable. It applies to employers with just five or more employees. So pregnancy disability leave will kick in where almost nothing else does.
Right. So it doesn't take many employees to reach the threshold. And in our California Leaves podcast, we talked about the fact that there can be some other leaves that end up with interplay or dovetailing, like CFRA, or even some kind of reasonable accommodation related to the pregnancy after the California PDL is done.
Yeah, and that's one that I frequently see kind of tripping up employers or HR people. Of course, the pregnancy disability leave statutes are worded, you know, that employees are entitled up to 4 months leave or,
right,
you know, a maximum of 4 months leave. And the court here in California has basically chosen to ignore that language and has held that even after the expiration of any protected leaves, that employers still have an obligation to consider additional leave as a reasonable accommodation. So as an HR person, always something to keep in the back of your mind.
Right. So we get a lot of different scenarios for clients. I know we've had some recent ones. So let's go through this one. An employee comes to their supervisor, tells them that they need to take time away from work because of morning sickness, maybe just coming in later, some kind of start time that lets them get past that morning sickness. What kind of recommendations, policies, procedures are you typically providing in that scenario?
This is one of the areas where an employee can use pregnancy disability leave. It can be used before pregnancy and it can be used intermittently. One of the kind of mistakes that I see clients make is that they don't treat pregnancy accommodation the same way that they do disability accommodation. There's kind of a tendency to treat it less formally. And I think that can definitely backfire. When you have an employee who says, you know, they need to be coming in later, they need time off for doctor's appointments, you know, to have those reasonable accommodation little lights going off for you and, you know, to make sure that you are doing an interactive process and documenting it the same way that you would for any other type of disability.
Yeah, I think people think of pregnancy definitely in a more informal way because it's so common. And I see also that people don't think of some of the conditions related to pregnancy in the same way that they do other formal disabilities or needs for accommodation. I know recently I had a client that really made some missteps over an ectopic pregnancy with an employee. And the employee needed quite a bit of time off afterwards. And the employer just was not thinking about recovering from a tubal pregnancy in the same way that they traditionally gave pregnancy disability leave to other workers. So it's a matter of really dotting your I's and crossing your T's with this.
Yeah. And I've seen the same issues with, you know, other types of pregnancy loss or miscarriage. Employers are used to providing baby bonding leave after the fact, but they don't necessarily think about the fact that it may take equally as much time or longer to recover from that situation. So definitely something to be thinking about and definitely to be educating your supervisors and managers as well.
Yeah, to be aware of it. And I think that it's certainly not optimal, but your HR person does need to really think about that with regard to pregnancy disability leave. So I know I've had some questions in the last year or so about what needs to be in a doctor's note about pregnancy, about the pregnancy disability leave, what is going to need to be in a doctor's note about a person's pregnancy.
Yeah, so we talked about this in one of our previous podcasts, but I am a big fan of employers providing, you know, their own form to have the employee give to their doctor to fill out, especially if we're talking about restrictions during a pregnancy. So lifting restrictions, additional breaks that are needed,
right.
You know, a check the box form that says, you know, person shouldn't be lifting over blank, you know, where they can write in 10 pounds, 20 pounds, whatever, or kind of set out a schedule for breaks. I think those can be really helpful and kind of helps the both the employee and the doctor focus in on what's the information that the employer actually needs. I don't know. How about you, Karen?
I like to see specificity. So, you know, when you have warehouses or agriculture or physically demanding jobs, I think it's very important to give the worker the best opportunity to have the accommodations that they may need during their pregnancy. And that may include time off, like time off for doctor's appointments. Maybe they're going to have doctor's appointments more frequently than others, right? Maybe they have to have some procedures related to their pregnancy, all of that. So I like to have it documented, like you're saying, in a form created by the employer so that we can have the most effective transmission of information from the doctor related to the pregnancy. And with regard to the pregnancy, you know, when you're getting these notes, this is confidential medical information. And just like the other doctor's notes with leaves, I like to see the medical privacy protected in the same ways that we protect other medical privacy in the workplace. Many times with pregnancy, many people have had very joyous experiences with pregnancy. And, you know, you might have a baby shower at work, things like that. And people know when another worker has a due date, right? And so there's a certain level of your coworkers kind of being a bit emotionally invested in the pregnancy or having knowledge about a particular medical condition, which is very unusual compared to other medical conditions or accommodations in the workplace. So I like to remind HR professionals about medical confidentiality and about using the same or very similar forms with regard to pregnancy disability leave so that we can have the best documentation possible.
Yeah. And I think, you know, you bring up a good point. This is an area where so many people have experience. And I think there's a lot of discussion of symptoms and my back hurts, my feet hurt, that kind of thing. And there's kind of some commiserating that goes on. But I've had a few litigation cases lately where, you know, after the fact, the employee saying, I kept telling my manager that my back hurt, that I needed, like, you know, yes, a break to get off my feet. And the manager's like, well, yeah, she, you know, we talked about that her back hurt and her feet hurt, but I wasn't realizing that, you know, she was asked, you know, she thought she was asking for accommodation by saying that. You know, I thought it was kind of this, you know, woman to woman commiseration. So that's something to watch out for, too, because it is, you know, sort of a common experience. There is a lot of bonding that goes on around it. But again, to be treating this like any other disability, if you've got an employee who's complaining about how they're affected in the workplace or, you know, talking about needing to get off their feet, you got to think right. about it the same way if they had a sprained ankle or something.
Right. I think that's probably one of the best reminders for managers, supervisors in the workplace is to think of it in that same way.
Yeah.
So another common area that we end up talking about is when you can use the pregnancy disability leave. And I've even had managers over the years say, well, the pregnancy's over. The opportunity for pregnancy disability leave must be over too, right?
Oh, no, don't say that.
And so let's give the foundational statement that pregnancy disability leave, yes, can be used after the birth of a child, right?
Yes, absolutely. For any pregnancy-related condition. So think about postpartum depression, issues that are related to lactation. There's a myriad of things that can keep going on as a
post procedures after childbirth. If someone yep. needs to go back in the hospital related to childbirth, accommodations as they physically recover from childbirth, all of that. And so don't make that mistake of thinking that the pregnancy disability leave evaluation stops at birth, right?
Yeah, or even that it stops when the employee returns from leave. You know, say you have an employee who comes back, you know, 8 weeks after birth, they may still have some additional pregnancy disability leave left. And if they end up with a, you know, a lactation related condition a couple months down the road, they can also use pregnancy disability leave to cover that.
And speaking of that, I had a case a couple of years ago, and I think this is another important distinction. So we had a worker, and unfortunately, she had back-to-back miscarriages. And my client thought that the pregnancy disability leave was per year. And huge mistake, right?
Yep. It is per pregnancy.
And so in a situation where someone has had miscarriages or back-to-back pregnancies, anything like that, can end up in a situation where you really need to think about the pregnancy disability leave entitlements and accommodations as being per pregnancy, not with regard to a particular calendared amount of time, which is different. It's different than many other leaves.
Yeah, it's different than almost all other forms of leave. So, no, that's definitely true.
So let's talk about, I think you've been looking at some recent cases on pregnancy disability leave. Are we seeing jury verdicts or judges ruling about pregnancy disability leave in a way that we need to take notice of?
Yeah, this is an area of increasingly large verdicts in recent years. There is one in particular that I think it was either the largest or one of the largest verdicts in history, at least at the time. But we've seen a $185 million punitive damages award in a pregnancy discrimination case within the last few years. There was a case that actually made it up to the U.S. Supreme Court addressing the issue of pregnancy accommodation and the fact that, you know, you need to make the same accommodations for a pregnancy, for a pregnant woman that you do for any other disabled employee, whether that's, you know, due to a non-work related injury or a workers' comp injury or something like that. So definitely an area where I think we're seeing less and less tolerance.
Right. And a need for consistency. And we talked about this in one of our other podcasts about leaves in California, was that applying consistently your requirement for a doctor's note, your documentation, how you'll maybe shift some job duties, all those kind of aspects of dealing with these needs of employees, you better be doing it consistently.
Yeah. And the law on pregnancy disability leave specifically talks about, you know, transferring someone to a lighter duty position, you know, making accommodations in terms of hours, things like that. But so I think there is kind of a heightened expectation, and you especially see this from the court because it's a finite period of time. That's something that really seems to stand out to judges. They expect employers to make more of an effort to accommodate when it's a finite period of time versus something that may go on for years. So, you know, they're a little bit less tolerant of employers trying to say that an accommodation is a hardship if it's only something that's going to last for a month or two.
Right. And so you mentioned transferring duties, and I know this is a question we've gotten from manufacturing kind of clients. Is when a worker on an assembly line or a warehouse type job, and they may have lifting requirements and they need to get away from those lifting requirements for the pregnancy, but there are other parts of their job that don't have lifting requirements. Let's be clear. Do you need to take a look at transferring some of those job duties to another worker if that's what the doctor note and the doctor's opinion is?
Definitely. You know, I think that's going to be viewed as a pretty reasonable accommodation.
Again, because it's temporary.
For a finite period of time. Yeah.
Right. It's temporary. It's nothing that really looks like too much of a hardship in a big manufacturing plant, right?
Exactly.
Okay. So for employers to understand liability, in our other podcast, we talked about with lactation accommodations, the labor commissioner, DFEH. So for pregnancy disability leave, where are we going to see any kind of state agency involvement or people making complaints?
So pregnancy disability leave is part of the Fair Employment and Housing Act, the FEHA. So the DFEH has investigation abilities in that realm. The DFEH can also file legal action now. And then employees also have an independent right of action to file a civil suit.
Okay. And so even much like the lactation accommodation, if a business is having pregnant workers that they're not transferring job duties or they're not really giving the correct leave, do have the risk of also class actions and really those bigger numbers if you have a large number of women who are seeking this leave in the workplace, right?
Definitely. Yeah. If you have any kind of larger policies and, you know, one of the areas we see that with is, you know, if you have different policies for different types of disabilities or different types of injured workers, if you are not providing the same level of accommodation to pregnant workers, that can absolutely lead to class claims.
So as we close out here in this podcast, kind of my big takeaways are the pregnancy disability leave can be used intermittently, right? On a daily basis if needed. Morning sickness is kind of something we hear about a lot.
Yep.
And we want documentation that's helpful in the workplace and consistent with how we're treating the other workers, right?
Yep.
And then lastly, don't fall into some of the traps about when pregnancy disability leave can be used. Don't think that it can't dovetail or follow other leaves because it does. And any of these employers with five or more employees, we're going to have to comply with this law.
Yes.
Thank you for joining us on the Ogletree Deacons podcast. You can subscribe to our podcasts on iTunes or through your favorite podcast service. And remember, the information in this podcast is for informational purposes only and is not to be construed as legal advice.